My name is Aniel Zuberi Fields, and welcoming you to join us on a journey through Little Ethiopia, what began as a conversation between Shaka Tafari and myself about what it means to have African names in America. And being disconnected from the continent and much of the culture of Africa led Shaka on a journey to find a bit of Africa in LA's Little Ethiopia.
I turned 35 years old on April 17th. Physically, I didn't feel any different. But as I was reflecting on my life that day, my mind started drifting back to those early years. Like, damn, I had a really good childhood. It was a real special time growing up a young Rasta kid in L.A. And 90s Venice was a trip. So as I was riding around my old neighborhood, bumping Bob Marley and the Wailers, I kept thinking about my mom and how she raised me.
Hey, Shaka.
Hey, mommy.
So you have some questions?
Like many Jamaicans who migrated to the United States in the late 70s and 80s, Mama was very passionate about two things: her spiritual faith in Rastafari and Pan-Africanism. And as a kid, I got to see her vision up close, because in 1993, Mama opened the Rastafarian Culture Center in Venice Beach.
That was to become self-employed, and because I didn't have confidence that anybody would want to hire me and give me a real job. And, you know, especially when you're trying to embrace your culture or your blackness or your Africanism. At the time, nobody wanted that.
Located on 4th and Rose Avenue, Mama wanted the center to feel like a small island storefront, like the one she grew up in Mandeville. It was a one-story, rusty orange building with a green awning and hardwood floors. But if you asked me, it was more like a black museum. There were posters of Bob Marley, Marcus Garvey, and other Pan-African leaders on every wall. We even had a small gift shop where we had t-shirts, albums, and djembes for sale. Mama was also having a hard time teaching us how to read, so she dedicated a small portion of the wall to Hooked on Phonics. But unlike most museums, the center was where we lived. There were no bedrooms, and we really didn't own a lot of furniture either. But that's exactly how Mama liked it, though. Me and my brother slept on futons that were easy to break down and even easier to put away. And Mama wasn't making money like that. So in order to keep the center afloat, she would host a party every Friday night. People from all over the city would come through. There would be so many people in our house, y'all, that Mama had to move our futons into the backyard, where she would drape us in extra thick blankets and try to put us to bed underneath the stars. Hood camping for real, for real.
Well, the space was small, but there was no place for you guys to really lay down and rest once the people have started coming in. So yeah, I might have done something crazy like that. It was camping. I put you out in the backyard to camp.
Hood camping was cool, but I always made my way back to the party. The whole scene was a production. Mama had flyers made, she let bands perform, and the event was BYOB for a donation at the door. But the best part about it was all the eclectic people I got to meet. Everybody was welcome.
And it was quite diverse. I mean, we were in the heart of Venice and stuff where, you know, all the wannabe actors and singers and musicians and all the cultural people. And so, you know, as the Friday night gathering grew, it drew up people, all kinds of people from all over the world, I would say.
Mama's right. The crowd was always a mixed bag. Hell, even Crips and Essays got along at the center. But my favorite party goers on Friday nights were the people from Africa, South Africa, Nigeria, Ghana, and Ethiopia. Like Mama, they weren't from here, so they sounded different. They moved different to the music. And for whatever reason, I always identified with that. Mama had everybody under one roof just kidding. Now that I'm grown enough to say this, I'm pretty sure that the weed has something to do with everybody feeling so friendly. What I didn't realize at the time, though, is that Mama was trying to give me a sense of community, a sense of pride in our people in the only way that she knew how. While LA has never been known as a hub for Jamaicans, It was especially important to Mama that we had a connection to Africa beyond the Friday night parties at the center. She wanted me to feel it in my soul.
I needed to name my kids, give my son a name, something that would pick me up and make me feel strong and give me something to look forward to, you know, just a son that is going to be strong, a leader. Mm. Yeah, so your name is supposed to lead you there.
So when it came to my name, Mama tried to name me after the entire continent. Check this out. My first name is Shaka, after King Shaka Zulu, founder of the Zulu Empire in Southern Africa. My middle name is Mali, just like the West African country. And my last name. Here's where it gets a little interesting. Originally, my mama wanted to give me my father's last name, Coleman. But as you can imagine, she wasn't feeling that. Shaka Mali Coleman? Hell nah. And since my daddy wasn't exactly stepping up, Mama decided to give me my very own lineage, inspired by
His Imperial Majesty, Emperor Haile Selassie I of Ethiopia.
Before he became known by his royal titles, Emperor Haile Selassie's first name is Tafari, which means he who inspires awe or is to be revered. Shaka Mali Tafari. Yeah, that's more like it. Ruling from 1930 to 1974, Emperor Haile Selassie was Ethiopia's 225th and last monarch. He's often seen as the architect of modern Africa. Under his rule, the University of Addis Ababa was built, Ethiopian Airlines was launched, and he famously established the African Union in the nation's capital. But just like every king in history, he wasn't perfect. His legacy is also marked by famine and corruption, too. But his reputation in Jamaica, some would argue, is closer to divinity rather than royalty, depending on who you ask.
Undaunted by the driving rain, a sea of faces awaited at the Palisados Airport the arrival of a living legend, the Lion of Judah, who had won the respect and admiration of Jamaicans. The air was charged with excitement as anxious, expectant faces searched the skies for the first glimpse of the great silver bird that would bring their hero to Jamaican soil for the first time. Members of a local cult, the Rastafarians, who were easily distinguished by their long beards and unshorn locks, were present in full force. Rousing, boisterous, tumultuous welcome ever given to any visiting or local celebrity, His Imperial Majesty Haile Selassie I, Emperor of Ethiopia, arrived. The crowd erupted into a frenzy of rejoicing as they broke through the lines of soldiers and police and surged out onto the tarmac, eager to engulf the emperor with their affection.
Mama was just a five-year-old little girl on the island when Emperor Haile Selassie visited Jamaica in 1966. But can we pause for a second? Can you imagine what that moment meant to an island of Black people just 4 years removed from 3 centuries of British colonization? Now, there's a lot more to the story, but I can understand why many Rastafarian believers saw Selassie's rule as a symbol of Black empowerment. To them and many others, the existence of a Black king meant that Black people didn't have to tolerate oppression of any kind. Now, I can get with that, but even though Mama was talking about all this rich history, I'm not going to front. The concept of the motherland was a tough pill to digest for a little Black kid growing up in L.A. Back then, all I saw about Africa on TV was a bunch of white missionary ladies trying to raise 80 cents a day to feed kids that looked just like me. But Mama, she wasn't allowing that to be the narrative in her house.
I love Africa. I wanted my kids to grow up to be proud Africans. And I just wanted to be proud of my culture. So, you know, naming you after the ancestors was the way to go.
So with the few extra dollars from her Friday night kickbacks, Mama made sure we got our fill of African culture right here in L.A. From Venice, we'd head over to Inglewood to pick up oils and incense from a Kenyan shop called Virgie's. I always loved seeing the elaborate wood carvings hanging from the wall. Mama never bought us action figures, but we had a crib full of African masks to play with. Then we'd bounce over to Leimert Park to a Nigerian spot called Rhythms of the Village. Mama was friends with the musician who owned the place. I later found out that he played the bass for Fela Kuti. And then we'd slide down the 10, back home. But we'd hop off in my favorite neighborhood in the city.
If you ever wanted to explore the Horn of Africa, the fastest way to get there is through West L.A.
INLA's Tina Malave took a drive down Fairfax between Pico and Olympic and found some finger-licking good dining in Little Ethiopia.
In 2002, the L.A. City Council designated the stretch of Fairfax Avenue between Olympic and Pico Boulevard as Little Ethiopia. But make no mistake, it was Little Ethiopia way before that. The city council was late to the party. To this day, it's the only one of LA's 18 officially recognized enclaves named after a predominantly black country. And it's the first neighborhood in U.S. history named after an African country. Little Ethiopia brought the best out in Mama. She felt at home there. She'd let her locks hang down to her hips. And she always wore some type of traditional outfit. You know the ones I'm talking about. The long, pretty dresses with the beautiful colors and patterns, with the scarf to match. Mama was easy to identify wherever we went, but I knew she was really comfortable when her accent came out. Instantly, her patois was a little more pronounced. Instead of saying hi or what's up, it would be, "Awagwan, sister." And when it was time to say goodbye, she'd say, "Uno no se me soon come," which means, "You know I'm coming back." And we were always coming back. It made sense because there is no Little Jamaica in L.A. And whenever you find Ethiopians, you can find Jamaicans nearby.
As I've gotten older, learned and sort of developed a specific like warmth and appreciation for the relationship between Ethiopians and West Indians of varying countries, but especially Jamaica.
That's my homegirl, Hannah. We met last year on a Zoom call on assignment for another story highlighting Black voices.
I'm a staff writer at The Atlantic now in New York. But, you know, I head back out to L.A., to California whenever I can get a chance.
Hannah's one of the preeminent culture writers of our generation. Originally from Anaheim, she's a first-generation Ethiopian and Black woman who has her own memories of Little Ethiopia.
There was always a couple Rastas around. And I didn't really know their deal because I didn't know them. And my parents didn't know them or anything. But as I've gotten older and, you know, made friends here in New York or made friends in college who are Jamaican and Guyanese and Trinidadian, it clicks. Certain memories that I have sort of start coming into focus in a different way.
And just like Mama, Hannah's parents are immigrants too.
They left Ethiopia in the 80s. My mom came in 81 and were part of a generation of folks who left basically amid the height of the Red Terror, which was the violence carried out during the Marxist regime that deposed Haile Selassie and went on to rule for another almost 20 years.
We'll come back to those larger immigration pushes and pulls later. But as you can imagine, or perhaps you know firsthand, when you leave your homeland for a whole new country, more than 9,000 miles away, you want nothing more than to create a home away from home, to feel like you have roots somewhere, or to feel connected to something. I know that's what Mama craved for us. And even though there's a strong Habesha presence in Southern California now, there's not a lot in Orange County. So Hannah's parents brought their four children to L.A. to celebrate their Ethiopian heritage. Oh, before I forget, Habesha is a term for various groups of Ethiopian and Eritrean descent.
The drive to L.A. from Anaheim was always funny. Like, I feel like I sat on the 5 and the 91 for, like, half of my childhood. And I know that's obviously, like, super, super exaggerated. And also that specific route just feels so rote and so familiar.
Hannah remembers coming to L.A. mostly to attend services at St. Mary's Ethiopian Church in Ladera Heights. And then after that, her family would link up with loved ones in Little Ethiopia.
Yeah, I mean, I have memories just like hanging out on Pico and Fairfax and going to like shows or seeing family friends at like Roslyn since I was super young, you know, before it became Little Ethiopia, before it was sort of formally called that. But I remember the excitement that the general like LA OC Ethiopian community had around that. Like it was kind of in the air when you would walk around like that stretch on Fairfax.
It warms my heart to think that Hannah and I may have crossed paths in Little Ethiopia tagging along with our parents. Both of us on our own cultural expeditions. Her perspective coming from within the community. Mine as a little Jamaican boy looking in. And if you've been to Little Ethiopia, you know exactly what she means by excitement. Straight up. As soon as you park the car, you can practically smell, hear, and taste the energy of the whole neighborhood. On impact, you'll feel the vibe of Ethiopian jazz playing in the background, or the rhythm of people greeting each other in Amharic, Ethiopia's national language. You could also hear people chewing in Jidda with their mouth open and no shame. And if you haven't had the incredible opportunity to visit Little Ethiopia in person yet, you've probably already been transported there thanks to Issa Rae, the star and creator of the Emmy-nominated HBO series, Insecure.
Can we eat, okay? Have you ever tried, like, the raw meat? Not that raw meat, but you know what I'm saying, but, like, the food. You okay?
Yeah, girl. You know what? This is your birthday. I don't want to waste it on me.
No. Girl, stop. What's going on?
I can't think of another show that more accurately captures the relationship between two black women. Insecure is the ultimate homegirlship. Rae plays Issa D, and her best friend Molly Carter is played by comedian Yvonne Orji. What I love most about their relationship is, whenever the two need to share an intimate moment, or part ways, or reconnect with each other, they come to Little Ethiopia for the same food and sistership Hannah came for every Sunday.
It's a place that Molly and Issa, as friends, return to each other in a way, right? And so, like, this East African restaurant, right, is a site where these two women of other parts of the diaspora gather and recalibrate their relationship, their closeness, their tenderness with one another, is something that I've always appreciated.
I know how Hannah, the cultural critic, processes those scenes. I also know that she may have interviewed Issa Rae on an occasion or two. But what I wanted to know was, how Hannah, the Habesha girl from Cali, felt, seeing her childhood stomping grounds being showcased in such a prominent way.
It was so heartening to see that. It was super exciting. It was really like, you know, for all the feelings I have about the country and politics and diaspora, to see this, to see somebody else from outside our small community, but within our sort of larger diasporic one, celebrate it in this way was really exciting. And I just remember the enthusiasm of, like, texting my sister and cousins, and we're all sort of just, like, in this chat, like, stopping what we're doing to appreciate what a monumental moment it is to have this kind of thing on screen, this sort of simple but really sweet and tender nod to a space that's really important to us and to a way of relating to one another that's really important to us.
By the time I was a teenager, I was beginning to understand what Mama was trying to do, why she was taking us to places like Little Ethiopia, and why exposing us to the diaspora meant so much to her. There's so much strength in relating to one another and building communities together. Mama didn't give me an Ethiopian last name because it sounded better than my father's. The name was meant to connect me to a lineage way beyond LA. It was meant to connect me to ancestors known and unknown, from Jamaica all the way to Ethiopia. And man, once I figured that out, I can't tell y'all how many hours I spent asking the Google about the Jamaican-Ethiopian connection, listening to the music, visiting businesses, and staying up to date with Big Ethiopia. My visits to Little Ethiopia as a child really helped me fill in the gaps that textbooks and TV shows created in my head about Africa, about families like Hannah. To put it simply, Little Ethiopia has always had a way of making me feel whole, just like Mama always wanted. That's why I find myself coming back to Little Ethiopia time and time again.
Actually, talking to you now, I'm very proud. The fact that you're doing research about Africa, you're studying the stories of our ancestors. Oh, I'm very proud.
Exploring Africa in LA, a Little Ethiopia story, was written and executive produced by me, Shaka Mali Tafara. It was co-executive produced by Anyo Zubiri Fields. Additional production and editing by Lushik Lotus Lee and PJ Shahamat. Scoring by me and Eduardo Perez. This piece was mixed and mastered by PJ Shahamat. You can connect with me on Instagram at shaka.mali, shaka_mali on Twitter, or shakamali.com. Story consultant, Gabrielle Horton. This piece was originally commissioned and edited by KCRW's Independent Producer Project.